From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
At the election, Helen Haynes, who is the MP for the Victorian regional seat of Indi, made history as the first federal independent to succeed another independent. A local who came from the health sector, Haynes was backed by grassroots campaigners called Voices for Indi, who also helped get her predecessor, Cathy McGowan, into Parliament. But while McGowan, at the end of her time in Parliament, shared some real legislative power with other crossbenchers when the coalition fell into minority government, now the lower house crossbenchers don't have that clout. So, just a few months into her term, how does Helen Haynes see her role? What can she achieve? And what does her community expect of her? She joins us today. Helen Haynes, you said after the election that your focus was going to be on building relationships. What's been your progress on that so far? And what are you seeking to achieve by this networking?
Michelle, building relationships is key to getting things done, and it's key to establishing an environment that is less an environment of conflict and less an environment of bringing people down, which are a couple of the aspects that many people, I think, in Australia have indicated they're tired of in politics. And in my electorate of Indi, we have a mantra about doing politics differently. And I think the first step in that is to behave well and to meet people with respect and to start to get to know people. So that has been my intention when I've arrived. And I've been doing that in two ways. Firstly, an informal way. In divisions, for example, it's a great opportunity in the House to mix the seating up a bit. So I try my best to go and sit next to someone I haven't met before and say g'day, introduce myself and ask a little bit about them. And that's been really, really interesting. I've enjoyed that. When I see those people then out in the corridors, we've got a starting point. I had a conversation just in the House yesterday with a member of the coalition government, and we had quite a different view on what was going on in rural and regional Australia around climate change, for example. And we had a great conversation in the House, and we'll follow it up with a cup of tea. So there's that. The other more formal approach is that on the key policy areas that I campaigned on, I've been setting up meetings, formal meetings with the ministers in those portfolios. So again, I can come across and say, g'day, I'm Helen, new member for Indi. This is what's going on in my community. This is what my community tell me is really important. Love to work with you on that. Today, for example, I have a meeting with Minister Taylor, and I'm going to have a chat to him about what's going on up and down the electorate of Indi, where we've got more community energy groups than any other electorate in Australia, and people getting on with the job of finding ways to practically use renewable energy in their communities. So that's going to be a really interesting conversation. The last sitting week, I met with Minister Simon Birmingham, and I wanted to talk to Simon about the concerns in my community around geographical indicators with wine and cheese. We had a lovely chat about that. Simon then was coming down to Tim Fisher's funeral down in Farrah in Albury, rang my office and said, Helen, I'm coming down. How about we meet down at one of the winemakers and cheese factories? And so we did. So, you know, I think that approach is a decent and reasonable approach, and one that I'm really hopeful will help me work with government.
So you found the ministers pretty accessible?
Absolutely, I have. Absolutely, I've had no problem whatsoever. When my office rings for an appointment, that's been forthcoming.
One of your priorities has been climate change, and you mentioned your conversation about that. Have you had a chance to talk to ministers about that issue?
Yes. So the very first person I spoke to when I came to Parliament was the Minister for Environment, Susan Lee. And, of course, Susan's just across the river from me, a member for Farrah. So I thought it was important that the very first person I meet should be my closest neighbour. And so we had really just an introductory conversation, and I was keen to hear what Susan's agenda was for the environment. So we talked about that. And I'll be having a lot more conversations with Susan around things in particular that are of keen interest to me. And that's the work that I feel that we need to be doing around adaptation and climate, most particularly for our rural and regional communities, for our farmers, for our agricultural industry. So not only will that be a conversation I'd like to have in more depth with Susan, but also with Minister McKenzie, and my office is setting up a meeting with Minister McKenzie to have that conversation.
You've obviously thought out a strategy of operation, but nevertheless, as an independent without a political infrastructure behind you within the Parliament, as it were, as a coalition or Labour backbencher would have, how do you organise yourself to get across all the legislation you need to? Do you try and get across everything, or do you say, well, I'm just not going to be able to do it all, so I won't worry about certain bills?
Look, two things there, Michelle. Being organised is really fundamental to being a good MP. I come from the same stable that Cathy McGowan came from, so I've been supported in my community by a grassroots movement who are highly organised, and I've learned a lot through that. The other part to that is to make sure I've got the staff around me that I need to help me to get through this very big workload, because I see it as my responsibility as a Member of Parliament to make sure that I know what each and every bill is about. So that is an onerous task. Having said that, I'm choosing the issues, of course, that I'm really wanting to go into bat in. It's not my job as an independent member on the crossbench to oppose everything that the government has to say or do. Not at all. There's many things I agree with, and I want to work with them. But on the key issues that I've identified, and they are around climate, they're about rural health, they're about social justice with welfare recipients, they're about adaptation and support to the agricultural community, mental health, aged care, those things, I'll be working super hard on those ones in particular.
Is it frustrating to have no legislative power because the government has a majority, albeit a narrow one? And I wonder, when you see Jackie Lambie, an independent in the Senate, getting big concession in return for her vote on the tax bill, do you feel a bit envious?
No, I don't. Our conversation about power in the Australian Parliament House is, of course, a really obvious thing to think about, because what we do know is that power comes and power goes, and we've seen that play out so many times here. The world can change very quickly. Right now, Jackie in the Senate does have considerable power, and I really hope that she uses that wisely and ethically. I believe I have power, maybe soft power, other ways. So right now, I don't have the power of being on the crossbench in a minority government, but it's very narrow. The government is in majority. Clearly they are, but that can change. We know it can. And in the meantime,
there are always a lot of buses around you, Ben.
There's many things that can happen, Michelle. You know that better than anyone. You're an expert in this. I'm a new player. But what I have observed keenly over my long experience of life is that there are many ways you can get things done. And there are many parliamentary tools at my disposal. I am a representative from Indi. I'm here with all the powers that job brings with it. And I can speak in the parliament. I can speak to the press. I can work with my constituents to help them bring their voice to Canberra through various other mechanisms, petitions, meetings with people. You know, I'm very, very determined to work with the citizenry to help them find their power.
Now, you mentioned your interest in social issues and welfare. One of the controversial matters at the moment, of course, is the government's proposal to set up trials for drug testing people who go on to New Start and the Youth Allowance. What's your view of this? Especially given your health background, you were a nurse.
Yes, that's right, Michelle. So, look, firstly, I commend the government for drawing attention to the issues of drug and alcohol dependency that is alive and well, in our community. This is a serious issue for people who suffer from that dependency. It is a serious social issue for them. I've looked at the evidence on this. It's been my training as both a nurse and a midwife, and as a long-term rural health researcher and public health advocate. The evidence is not there to support this particular bill. There is no evidence from around the world or nationally that linking welfare to drug and alcohol rehabilitation and job seeking has any merit. There's none at all. So I don't support this bill. I have concerns too that should this indeed go ahead, that we don't have the resources in our communities right now to provide effective drug and alcohol treatment to the people who voluntarily seek it. So if we're attempting to do this in people who are not voluntarily seeking it, we don't have the drug and alcohol workers on the ground. We don't have the rehabilitation centres. And most particularly, from my perspective, in rural in regional Australia, we have less of that than anywhere else. So I'm very concerned about this as an initiative to do good. I don't think it will do good.
Another current piece of legislation is for a crackdown on activists who've published farmers' information online. Is this an issue in your electorate and what's your view on it?
Yes, it is an issue in my electorate. I have a very strong agricultural constituency, Michelle, and many people have contacted my office deeply concerned about this, and I'm very supportive of bringing their views to the House on this. I do not in any way support activists publishing people's private details online. I think that is crossing the line, and I think it's potentially extremely dangerous. I support activists being active in a lawful way, in a way that is respectful and brings their views to the public discourse, but I don't in any way support the publication of people's addresses and farm sites.
Cathy McGowan, after leaving Parliament, has become active with the Rural Australians for Refugees group. Is the refugee issue one on which you want to involve yourself? And would you like to see more refugees encouraged into country areas? Would it be welcomed in your area and would it be useful?
So the Rural Australians for Refugees is a very active group in my electorate. The outgoing president of the RA group, Mari Selstrom, lived in Merrijig, which is in the electorate of Indi, and I met with Mari yesterday, and the new incoming president of the Rural Australians for Refugees. I'm very supportive of the work they do, and I think that they demonstrate beautifully the welcome that is awaiting people who are seeking refuge and asylum in Australia, and they represent communities who are keen to have new people come and join us, people with great skills that can add to the quality of life of our existing community and offer refuge to people who really need it. So yes, I'm very supportive of the work of Rural Australians for Refugees. And I've been on the record right from the day I stepped out as a candidate in saying that I do not believe that offshore detention for people seeking refuge in Australia and asylum in Australia is the right way to approach it. Again, we've got international models of community-based detention that are very effective. I'd love to see Australia move to that.
And what's your view on the Tamil family, the cases before the courts? The government wants to deport them, is determined to deport them if it can. Now, they're asylum seekers, they're not refugees, but nevertheless, their local community in Queensland wants them to stay.
Yeah, Michelle, I think the community of Bilawila demonstrates the point I made before, that there are rural communities who are ready and waiting to open their arms to people seeking asylum or indeed refugees in Australian rural communities. And what we've seen with this family is the way that they've integrated into that local community. And I'm not surprised that local community are really distressed by the imminent deportation now of this family. I think it speaks to me of the problems that we're having in Australia with the timeliness of the way that we process people's claims. So again, when it takes so long and when people have then the opportunity to form relationships in communities, I can understand very much why those communities are then asking the minister to show some discretion here. So I would be, and what I have done already is to call upon the Prime Minister and the Minister for Home Affairs to examine why the processing takes so long, why we end up with people then taking long and expensive and difficult court action in order to prosecute a decision in the end. People need certainty. Our immigration policy, of course, needs to ensure that it's fair, but that it is timely. So it's the timeliness that I think is really problematic in this case.
Now, in terms of Indi, what are the most pressing issues for your constituents at the moment?
Well, Michelle, when I go about the electorate, the most consistent thing I hear from people is their concern around mental health and their concern around the timeliness of support for people wishing to age with high quality in their own homes. So two particular issues there is the long wait time for aged care packages. That's an ongoing problem in my community. I've had people come to me at the ripe old age of 93 and 94, I'm thinking of two cases in particular, who've been assessed as requiring aged care packages and have a two-year wait. Now, those people both have a pretty good sense of humour, poor mobility and lots of issues coping, but as they said, they will die waiting, and at 94, there's a pretty good chance of that. So I'm really keen to work with the government on this and try to unpack where the problems are in this, beyond the problem of budget for this. But, you know, there's over 120,000 Australians waiting for aged care packages. That's pretty problematic in my book. Mental health is of utmost concern to the people in my community. Access to timely and appropriate services is really problematic in rural and regional Australia. There's lots of travel involved if you're trying to seek psychological support. And fundamental to that is that we have a rural health workforce shortage of psychologists, allied health workers, and drug and alcohol workers. So we simply don't have the boots on the ground to provide the support that people so desperately need.
And what about bulk billing in your area? The government boasts that it's at very, very high levels generally, but are there problems in the electorate about people getting access to bulk billing?
Yes, I hear many stories about access to bulk billing, but more than the access to bulk billing stories, I hear is people having access to medical care at all. So long wait lists to try to access GP care, so the most fundamental of primary health care. Again, it comes down to a shortage of boots on the ground in rural and regional Australia. In my electorate of Indi, access to GP care in the regional cities of Wodonga and Wangaratta is not as problematic as it is if you're living in a small community such as Alexandra or Yay or Euroa or Violet Town. These tiny communities, this is where it's very, very difficult to get GPs to come to those towns and then to stay. So, and when they're there, their capacity to provide bulk billing can be limited, of course, by the issues that they face in running a small business. So there's been a freeze on Medicare rebates for some time. That's now unfrozen. But I think we need some very systematic review of bulk billing in Australia and the item numbers that are being bulk billed for.
More generally, what do you think are the key concerns of regional Australia? And do you think they're being adequately met or met as well as they can be?
So, Michelle, one of the key concerns I have as a new rural and regional MP is that there was considerable work done in the last parliament to look right across Australia at what the key concerns were and to look at solutions for that. There was a report put together called Regions at the Ready, which talked a lot about infrastructure. It talked a lot about decentralisation. That report was very late in being tabled to the parliament last year. It finally was tabled in February. It had been due months before that. It came to the Parliament in February, and the response from the government was to then set up an expert panel to look at the 13 recommendations of the Regions at the Ready report. So we had an expert group develop the report. They did massive consultation right around the nation. We had recommendations. We then get an expert panel formed, which was to report back by March. They duly did that. We haven't seen the light of day for that expert panel review. I'm very concerned that that the coalition is doing a lot of reviewing, reporting, but no action. So I'm very, very keen to see that expert panel actions on that report sees the light of day and that we can get on with doing some things. And I know, as a rural and regional Australian and someone who's worked in public health for more than 30 years, that fundamental to improving the things that matter to rural Australians, which is their health and prosperity, and we know that prosperity leads to better health, is that we need to get on with building the infrastructure we need in rural and regional Australia. That means our NBN, our mobile phone black spots, our trains and public transport, our education opportunities need to be there. And I want to see the government get on with this and stop talking about it.
I'm sure you'll be in their ears.
I will be.
Helen Haynes, thank you very much for talking with The Conversation today. And that's all for this podcast. Thank you to my producer, Rashina Farooq. We'll be back with another interview soon. Goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.